Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for June 26th, 2012. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'll be speaking with Vicky Bousiotis about a molecular mechanism that's important for peripheral tolerance in the immune system. Adaptive immunity is that branch of the immune system that allows vertebrates to recognize and mount a specific immune response to a particular antigen, and then remember that antigen so that future exposures elicit an even stronger immune response. That's why vaccination works to protect us from disease. A tiny piece of a pathogen or a disabled pathogen is injected so that the adaptive immune system learns to recognize it and is prepared to quickly eliminate that pathogen if it's exposed to it again in the future. It's clearly important for the immune system to be able to tell the difference between normal healthy cells of the self and invading pathogens and infected or damaged cells that need to be eliminated so that it doesn't attack the cells of the self. This process by which immune cells distinguish self from non-self is called tolerance, and it prevents autoreactivity, which is what happens when the immune cells attack the self. Tolerance is mainly gained early in immune cell development, in the bone marrow or in the thymus, where autoreactive cells are eliminated in a process called central tolerance before they start circulating throughout the body. Inevitably, though, some autoreactive cells escape being detected and destroyed by central tolerance, and they make it into circulation. Peripheral tolerance is the process by which these autoreactive escapers are eliminated or suppressed. Vicky Bousiotis is an immunologist at the Harvard Medical School's Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center who studies the role of T cells in immune tolerance. In the peripheral tolerance system, regulatory T cells suppress autoreactive T cells to prevent autoimmunity. Bousiotis spoke to me by telephone about a new research article from her group that appears in the current issue of Science Signaling. Welcome, Dr. Bousiotis.
Thank you very much, Annalisa.
Peripheral tolerance is important for controlling autoreactive cells that escaped the central tolerance mechanisms and somehow made it into circulation. How are autoreactive cells identified?
Autoreactive aberrantly activated lymphocytes can be identified by the expression of activation markers, which normally are not present in resting peripheral lymphocytes. Among these activation markers, there are also some inhibitory receptors, which are upregulated during activation. Natural ligands for these receptors that are expressed in a variety of antigen-presenting cells, epithelial tissues, and even on lymphocytes can mediate suppressive signals to these abnormally activated autoreactive lymphocytes and suppress their activation, proliferation, expansion, and function. Some negative signaling receptors can induce death of these abnormally activated autoreactive lymphocytes, whereas other receptors can mediate inhibitory signals to block the expansion and function of these autoreactive lymphocytes without eliminating these clones. This latter mechanism involves the induction of T cell energy.
So cells in the periphery that are identified as being autoreactive can either be eliminated or they can just be suppressed so that they're not proliferating.
Exactly. So they may remain present, but they are suppressed from responding.
And is that what's meant by T-cell quiescence? So these cells are suppressed so they remain quiescent?
Actually, this is a term, T-cell quiescence, that has not been used properly all the time. Actually, there are two different conditions that are related to T-cell quiescence. One is the quiescence of naive resting T-lymphocytes, and the other is the state of quiescence that is present in the condition of anergic T-cells. So let's talk about energy first. T-cell energy is defined as a state in which the lymphocytes are viable but unable to respond to signals induced by their specific receptors. In other words, energy is a state in which there is an antigen-specific hyporesponsiveness. So in the case of T cells, anergic lymphocytes are unable to respond to signals which are mediated by their T cell receptor. So energy is a state that has been defined and studied extensively in vitro models, whereas tolerance is the in vivo counterpart of this condition of energy, and is defined as the state in which T cells are unable to respond to signals that are mediated by their T cell receptors in vivo, in the intact host. So energy intolerance different from the state that is defined as T-cell quiescence. This state of the T-cell quiescence is the one that the lymphocytes have not yet encountered antigen after leaving the thymus. In addition, these quiescent lymphocytes under these conditions are capable of responding upon stimulation with antigen via the T-cell receptor. This is in contrast to the anergic cells, which have already been exposed to a specific peripheral antigen, and during this process have been educated to become anergic and unable to respond upon antigenic rechallenge. So these are the two different conditions in which the lymphocytes are quiescent, but the mechanisms that lead to one versus the other are different. It is important to clarify that both these conditions, the state of energy and the state of T-cell quiescence, require active signaling and molecular event. It is really striking to consider that the state of T-cell quiescence of the naive lymphocytes, it's not a default state. It's an actively maintained gene program that must be reversed for T-cell activation to occur. So similarly to that, the state of energy is induced and maintained by active mechanisms and can be reversed under certain conditions that allow transmission of signals via specific pathway. And I think it's also important to stress that distinct mechanisms and signaling events regulate T-cell quiescence and T-cell energy. For example, PD-1 is an important pathway to regulate T-cell energy and tolerance, but this does not have a significant role in the maintenance of the quiescence of resting lymphocytes because it's practically not expressed in resting lymphocytes.
That receptor, PD-1, was the focus of this study. How does PD-1 keep the autoreactive T cells from proliferating?
That's a very good question because actually it's a very interesting point and has a long history behind it and many scientific debates. The idea and models of energy were established long before the role of PD-1 in regulated T-cell responses was determined. And it was thought for many years that the state of energy and its in vivo counterpart tolerance is induced when the T-cell receives the signal through the antigen receptor in the absence of co-stimulation. This concept became with the idea of the two-signal model of T-cell activation, which was originally developed to explain how the encounter of a naive T cell with antigen could lead either to activation or to induction of energy. And according to this two-signal model, effective activation of a naive T cell requires two signals to be delivered by antigen-presenting cells. The first signal confers specificity and involves antigen recognition provided by the interaction of antigen presented by the MHC complex with the T-cell receptor. The second signal is a co-stimulatory signal, is antigen independent, and is delivered by co-stimulatory molecules expressed on antigen-presenting cells to receptors expressed on the T-cells. So according to this two-signal model, only positive co-stimulatory molecules can be mediated to T-cells. And when the T-cell receives the signal only through the T-cell receptor, in the absence of this positive co-stimulation, it will become anergic and unresponsive to subsequent antigenic rechallenge. However, as I mentioned earlier, we knew even those days when the negative pathways were not known, we knew that the state of energy requires active signaling events. But only now we are able to identify exactly how these active signaling events are transmitted to the cells in order to suppress the responsiveness. Specifically now, we appreciate the role of the co-stimulatory pathways that provide second signals to promote negative effects and inhibit these responses to mediate T-cell tolerance and to prevent autoimmunity. So PD-1, CD279, its official name, and the ligands for this molecule, delivers such negative second signals to regulate the balance among T-cell activation, tolerant, immune-mediated tissue damage that can be induced during abnormal activation of tissue-specific lymphocytes. PD-1 mediates cell intrinsic effects during activation and during the expansion of autoreactive T cells, which lead to attenuation of reactive T cells during presentation of antigen by the dendritic cells mostly. PD-1 also inhibits self-reactive effector cells against non-hematopoietic tissues, and by doing this can suppress tissue-reactive T cells and protect the tissues against immune damage. But it's very interesting that besides mediating T cell intrinsic inhibitory effects, PD-1 can promote the induction and maintenance of inducible regulatory cells. And by mediating this mechanism, PD-1 provides a cell extrinsic effect, which also contributes to T cell tolerance.
In this paper, you started out looking at the intrinsic effects of PD-1, how it inhibits T cell proliferation. And what did you find?
We wanted to find out how PD-1 affects T cell proliferation because this is a general effect of PD-1 on T cells. This applies not just to reactive T cells, which are inhibited by PD-1, but also to any T cells that receive a signal through their T cell receptor and also through PD-1. In this context, a major issue is the effect that PD-1 has in compromising antiviral immunity and anti-tumor immunity by keeping virus-specific and tumor-specific T cells from proliferating. So it is not known how PD-1 blocks T cell expansion mechanistically, although we know that it has this function. For this reason, we wanted to examine how it affects the cell cycle machinery to mediate its intrinsic effects on inhibiting cell expansion and T cell proliferation. Our studies indicated that PD-1 blocks cell cycle progression in the G1 phase of the cell cycle. PD-1 did not mediate this effect by altering the expression of the positive regulator of the G1 phase, which include the cyclins and the cyclin-dependent kinases. Instead, PD-1 suppressed the transcription of the ubiquitin ligase, SKIP2, which mediates ubiquitination and subsequently degradation of P27, a potent inhibitor of cyclin-dependent kinases. As a consequence of the degradation of P27, T cells which received the PD-1 signal displayed impaired activation of the cyclin-dependent kinase, CDK2, and were unable to phosphorylate two important substrates of the CDK2 enzyme, the retinoblastoma gene product and the transcription factor SMAD3, which transmits signals downstream of the TGF-beta receptor. Each of these molecules has a distinct and important role in regulating the function of T cells. The phosphorylation of retinoblastoma protein prevents the release of the E2F transcription factors that interact with the retinoblastoma protein, and as a consequence, E2F transcription factors cannot initiate transcription of genes that lead to sensile progression. In contrast, the phosphorylation of SMAD3 by CDK2 promotes the transactivation capacity of this transcription factor, which eventually can bind on DNA and regulate gene expression in a positive and in a negative manner. As a consequence, the hyperactivated SMAD3 induces an opposed transcription of P15, a cyclin-dependent kinase inhibitor, which specifically inhibits progression of the cell cycle in the G1 phase. In contrast to the increased induction of P15, the hyperactivated SMAD3 suppresses the transcription of a phosphatase called CDC25A, which removes an inhibitory tyrosine phosphorylation from cyclin-dependent kinases and allows their enzymatic function.
So you found that PD-1 actually inhibits the cell cycle through multiple mechanisms.
Exactly. But the interesting point is that all these multiple mechanisms are consequences of the central target of PD-1, which is SKIP2, which eventually leads to a cascade of signal events that target the cell cycle in multiple endpoints. And this particular pathway affects the intrinsic mechanisms of inhibiting T cell proliferation by PD-1. But unexpectedly, these findings explain to us how PD-1 promotes the differentiation of regulatory cells. And it was very interesting to see that when PD-1 signals are provided to the cells, naive cells can convert into inducible regulatory cells in the presence of very, very small amounts of TGF-beta, which by themselves are unable to mediate differentiation of regulatory cells. So we saw that PD-1 inhibits CDK2, and by doing this, enhances the transcriptional activity of SMAD3, which is a TGF-beta specific transcription factor, leading to the generation of regulatory cells in the presence of minimal amounts of TGF-beta, because SMAD3 is activated through a different mechanism, through the inhibition of CDK2, not necessarily through signals regulated by TGF-beta receptor. But this is actually a very interesting finding because it reveals a mechanism of a synergistic effect between PD-1 and TGF-beta in vivo to maintain T-cell tolerance.
In terms of application of these findings, do they have any implications for how we might think about autoimmune diseases or how autoimmunity could be treated?
We believe that these findings have potential therapeutic implications at two different levels. In one hand, the identification of this PD-1 downstream endpoint and the finding that PD-1 arrests the cell cycle at the G1 phase, which is a hallmark of allergic T cells, provide the rationale for therapeutic activation of the PD-1 pathway in order to energize and suppress autoreactive T cells for the treatment of autoimmune diseases. The same approach can also be used to energize and suppress alloreactive T cells for the induction of transplantation tolerance. And of course, the major issue here is to develop an approach in which the PD-1 receptor will be co-ligated with the T-cell receptor, because this is a requirement for PD-1 to mediate its effect. It's impossible to mediate inhibitory signals through PD-1 alone without the presence of T-cell receptor-mediated signals. However, in these two conditions, autoimmunity and alloreactivity happening during transplantation, T-cell receptor signals have already been mediated to the cells, and it will be much easier to provide an additional signal in conjunction to PD-1 in order to exploit this pathway for therapeutic inhibition of T-cell responses. On the other hand, we think that the downstream endpoints of PD-1 signaling might be appropriate therapeutic targets in order to overcome the inhibitory effects of PD-1 in conditions in which we want to enhance immune responses, like in conditions in which T cells express very high levels of PD-1, like exhausted T cells or tumor-stimulated T cells, which express very high levels of PD-1. And in that case, one could overcome the inhibitory effects that are mediated through the PD-1 receptor by targeting downstream substrates and pathways.
In theory, you could target PD-1 in different ways, in different circumstances, to sort of control regulatory T cells, to get them to do what you want.
Exactly. You can do two things. One, you can control regulatory cells by inducing their generation expansion. One can control them the opposite manner by preventing their generation expansion.
Well, thank you, Dr. Bousiotis, for speaking with me.
Thank you very much, Melissa. Bye-bye.
That was Vicky Bousiotis, senior author of a paper published in the current issue of Science Signaling. That paper is by Pat Tsoukas and colleagues, and it's titled Selective Effects of PD-1 on AKT and RAS Pathways Regulate Molecular Components of the Cell Cycle and Inhibit T-Cell Expansion. And that wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.